I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's the Silicon Valley, a lot of high-tech company. So everyone is talking about AI. It's a hot topic right now. When I study sleep and treat sleep disorders, I'm wondering, how can AI technology really help us sleep better? So today, our guest is an AI specialist, and he is using AI data to help us understand our sleep better. So our guest today is Dr. Michael Koigebek, Chief Technology Officer at Sleep Cycle. He holds a PhD in AI and machine learning from Commerce University of Technology. He spreads essential machine learning research, leveraging his extensive background in tech, AI, and machine learning with a particular focus on deep neural networks. Michael actively drives Sleep Cycle's technological innovation, shaping the future of sleep technology. So how Sleep Cycle app is using AI data? What are some interesting findings? And how that can guide what our future sleep look like if we incorporate AI technology? Let's welcome Michael to give us more information. Hello, Dr. Koigebek. Welcome to Deep Into Sleep podcast.
Thank you.
I'm very excited to have you because you are, I think, one of the first AI specialists can really help us understand this hot new trend, how we can combine AI technology with the sleep field to help people sleep better. Can you please share a little bit about your background? What got you interested in this, like doing something about sleep?
Oh, of course. So my background before I came to where I am today is primarily in research. So I started out doing machine learning research. I worked with language. It was all part of the, when it started to kind of spur the whole NLP, large language model kind of field took off. So it was kind of part of that community, and that was a lot of fun. But then it got so expensive to train models, so I kind of was thinking, what else can I do? So after being in research and doing that for a while and doing some reinforcement learning and also like the supervised kind of learning that you can apply to really any kind of signal, I was talking to a friend here in Gothenburg who worked at a company where they did sleep analysis on a huge scale. So I thought, well, that sounds really fun. I mean, they had around 1 million people using the product every night. So you have this like audio stream of 8 hours every night from all of these. That's a lot of data and a lot of interesting things that you could do with it, I thought. So that was why and when I started to, or I joined Sleep Cycle. So Sleep Cycle is it's the largest sleep app in the world. And what we do here is that we take audio and we do sleep analysis upon that. I think we can get back into the details later on.
Yeah.
But that was really when I started to think about sleep. So before that, I was a machine learning guy. But now, after being here for 6 years, and I've had the privilege to work with some really, really smart, excellent people like Mike Radisar, for instance, who is our sleep expert and a professor in sleep psychology. I know and really love the subject of sleep. There's so many things you can do about it. It's kind of underappreciated, I think, as a subject, both for health and for general well-being. So,
definitely. And sleep is one of the pillar of our health, right? And I think if we sleep better and impact our mood, our physical health, our mental health, it's just so important. And I'm glad more and more people are doing that. So one thing you mentioned is this is huge amount of data. My superficial understanding of AI is you have to have enough data to work on, and then it can help generate patterns to understand, help us understand things better. So before we dive into more of that, I just want to understand this data collection process? Do you have to get consent from all the users, and how the data is handled, like data security, basically, nowadays, I think is also a big topic. How do you guys handle that in Sleep Cycle?
So that's a diverse question. For us, very, very important question. So we've actually been a public company now since 2021. So one of the things of being a public company is that you really need to make sure that you have all that with the cybersecurity and with the privacy locked down, and especially being in the EU with GDPR and so on. So that's a very important question for us. We're in a good place because we have always, from day one, done on-device processing. So the audio that we process when you track your sleep during the night is processed with a neural network in our signal processing on your phone. So we will never send that audio to a server or anything like that where we would process it. We process it there and then. So you can actually have your phone in airplane mode if you want to, or if you have no internet connection, that's also fine because we don't really need that to do the processing. So that's like the first thing, which makes the whole process very, very secure and private. Now, as you said, to be able to scale and to be robust. So I think that's the key word here. To be able to robustly do sleep tracking in all over the world. I mean, you have to think about, we are in about 180 different countries, all the way from, well, here in Scandinavia, where bedrooms may be built and, you know, the cotton sheets may be in a certain way, to East Asia. So we're very big in Japan and Korea, for instance, and the United States. There are so many different sleep environments that people sleep in. Either they sleep by themselves, they may sleep with a partner. I mean, that's very, very common, of course, but some have several children in the same room as well, and you can have pets and you can have different fans in the ceiling, and some even have a TV on somewhere in the room, you know, the next room. So being able to handle that is very difficult, and that is where the wide, really diverse data comes into play. So being able to do sleep tracking in a very controlled environment, that's easy. In this environment, it's very, very difficult. So what we do to handle that is that we have nicely asked people to consent to short clips. So no, you don't have to consent to do that, but if you do, then we can sample like 10-second clips that you can annotate, so you can say what's in them as well. And that data, since that is like sampled from all over the world, that's a very diverse, nice set of data that we can use to train our algorithms in to be able to handle all of those different circumstances. So that was really key, both like the different sleep environments, but also, I mean, we are different as humans as well. There are a lot of variations in age and sex and how you sound depending on where you live in the world as well. So being able to handle all of that, we need to go to kind of this extreme. Now, from that data, that is something that we store securely in our servers, and we have annotated that using our own annotators that we have on-prem that do the annotation to also, again, keep that data super private, and it's anonymized. So when we have the data here, we ourselves don't even know who the people are that gave us this data. So for the audio, that is how we handle it. Now, I can answer this question three or four more times, depending on what type of feature that we're talking about. So for doing the sleep staging, this is how we kind of handle that data part of the equation. I'll leave it at that for the time being.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. At least that helped us understand that you guys are very responsible for the data, and you do collect the data for good use, but you also make sure it's anonymous, it's stored securely or processed securely to make sure nobody need to worry about how their data gonna be used. So then I'm curious, after collecting all this data from all these countries, I'm sure it's a huge amount of number of people, huge amount of data. Any interesting findings you have so far from this data to understand sleep?
Yeah, so we have a lot, but I think that the audio in itself is not really what's interesting for that, to me at least. And the audio is what the audio is. We can say something about how noise levels in different environments, maybe. But what's more interesting for us is the aggregates of the like the result or the metrics that we have computed during the night. So, for instance, how long people sleep, it actually differs between different countries. We can see significant differences between like Europe and East Asia, for instance, where you sleep less, probably not because you need less sleep, but you do sleep less. And then we can see differences like in some regions you sleep twice a day. That's obviously something that will pop up as well. And a nice thing with having this type of data. Now we're talking about a different type of data than the audio. So the audio is under one consent and one type of data. To be able to answer questions like this, we have something we call a sleep study. So about 20% of our users have signed up and consented to be part of our sleep study, where we ask a few more questions. We ask their age and we ask their sex and we ask a number of different other questions. And then we use that to do research. So we have done several research collaborations with, Rebecca Robbins et al., for instance, which you may also know about, work at Harvard Medical. So together with her and her team, we did a paper that I think was really nice. So we looked back a couple of years. This was during the pandemic, to see if we could see how sleeping patterns had shifted before and after the pandemic. And since we have all of this data, we have about 3 billion nights of like analyzed data. So the aggregates from those. So we could see like statistically significant changes from before and after the COVID pandemic hit. And the reason that we could see that was, what led to it was really the restrictions put in place. We could see almost a step change in, and we looked at Seoul, and we looked at London, and we looked at Los Angeles, I think, and Stockholm. And we could see that in all of those places, but we could also see that in Stockholm, the pattern was slightly different. And the reason for that was something that we became famous for in the whole world. We didn't really have strong restrictions. So in the end, people started sleeping longer in Stockholm as well, but we didn't see this step function, but people kind of gradually worked more from home, I guess, and then we could see how it is. So working from home tend to lead to longer sleep duration. That is something that we can now have like a statistical fact around that. Right. Just because we already had the data. I mean, it would be very difficult to do that in hindsight otherwise, but we had this huge longitudinal data set where you could follow people over many years. So that's one thing that you can do, which is quite amazing, I think.
Yeah, that's great to know. Sounds like you, from the data, you can see a lot of patterns, how people sleep and how people adapt to different situations. Your data sounds like consistent with what my patients told me. A lot of people, you know, just verbally feel like, oh, they slept longer, better, they rest better during the COVID period when they have to work from home. But once they start commuting, especially where I am, Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, super busy traffic, everyone's stuck in traffic forever if they have to commute to work. And then a lot of people start feel like how they adjust their sleep schedule accordingly, right? What they can do. And it become a burden for some people. And they have to get up early and exhausting to spend like several hours on the road. In the morning and night, back and forth. So I'm glad to hear there are some data to be consistent with observations. Yeah. But other than those, you know, patterns, just to understand this, anything the data can help us clinically to help our treatment to sleep disorders.
So I think that's interesting as well. Now you would need to have like an extra layer on top, but since we have, except for how long you sleep, we now also have the sleep architecture. So we are actually able to do with a very good accuracy or at the same level as the best wearables now. We have a Cohen's Kappa of about 0.6 for full sleep staging, so light, REM, and deep. we're not differentiating different types of light sleep, but light REM and deep. And that's something that we can do, and I can talk about more about the technology behind that, but it's from the breathing. So we are from doing just movements, you become, I mean, you can do a little bit, but that's like on the same level as actiography. Sorry, very difficult word. But by using the breathing and the breathing stability in particular, so how your breathing patterns, if you will, how stable the breathing is, you can actually get a lot of information. And from that, you can train neural networks to do a really good sleep staging. So now you have the sleep architecture, you have the sleep duration, and over time, you can look at the sleep regularity. And sleep regularity, as you know, is very, very important for your health. So knowing your sleep regularity, knowing your like sleep efficiency, sleep architecture, and all of that. Well, now I guess you can really see some interesting patterns forming. Now, of course, we will not, from our side, I mean, we're not a medical product, so we don't really know who has sleep disorders, who doesn't. But we actually have used sleep cycle, are using sleep cycle right now in a study around Alzheimer's. So that's a collaboration that we do with Cambridge and UCL. So they follow using sleep cycle for 2 years, Alzheimer's patient or people that they think may develop Alzheimer's. And then they can use our data to see, you know, if there are any sleep metrics or patterns that kind of predict Alzheimer's.
Wow. Okay. So let me understand. So use the data, you can predict certain symptoms and or warning signs, or just or you just look at the connections and the patterns.
Yeah, I think this will be this is an observational study. I don't know all the details, so you should talk to the researchers really that are doing this study. But as I understand, it's an observational study where they follow these 200 patients over time, and then in hindsight, they will know whether or not they developed Alzheimer's, and then they can look at the sleep patterns and see if they can find markers there that predict Alzheimer's. And then I think they will look at other things than sleep as well in that study. So this is one part of it.
Yeah. When you mentioned the breathing, I want to ask more about that, because sleep apnea or sleep breathing problem in general, it's a, you know, big problem right now, especially I'm from China. So for in Asian populations, it's a more dominant issue. I think it's related to our bone structure, our airway structure. So I know getting a sleep study through the hospital is difficult. In America, recent years, I heard there's some wearable device actually got FDA approved to kind of collect sleep data and can be used for clinical diagnosis. And for Sleep Cycle app, sounds like it's not for medical usage. But I still want to know, since you mentioned there's accuracy there, it can really help with breathing. It's a phone app, right? You just put it on the bed near you. How does it help us detect this breathing issue? It cannot tell the blood oxygen level, right? But it can just by the breathing pattern, it can analyze that or something else.
So now I have to be super careful because we are running a study right now. So I can say that. So we're currently running a study in Australia, where we are using, where we are collecting data from about 700 patients, where we have both audio and PSG. And from that, we want to do a study on the technology that we have to see if we are, with that result, able to attain an FDA clearance. So that's what we want to do. So we are going to follow. So what you're saying is, Samsung, they got an De Novo on over-the-counter sleep apnea screening.
Yeah.
So we are trying to follow that. And obviously, if we are able to do it and we're able to kind of succeed, then we will be able to help people to understand more about their sleep apnea. That's all I want. I dare to say, not to anger anyone, but yes, it's definitely very important to us. I mean, it is a big health issue.
That's important to know. I think that's actually very promising and good to know so many more companies are into this field, trying to help general public to have a easier, cheaper, quicker access to their sleep data to help them identify things, right? Myself, I want to do a sleep study. So expensive, not even covered by the insurance. So it's just to how many people can afford it? And you have to wait for a long time. If you don't want to wait, they mail something to you, but it's only one night of data. So I'm glad a lot of devices or apps like what you are doing are trying to figure this out and make it easier and record multiple nights of data. It possibly can give us a lot more information about our own sleep than just one single night sleeping in a sleep lab that is an environment new to you, right? I have a lot of clients, they are so worried they won't sleep well in a new place. And so they are hesitant to even consider to go into a sleep lab to do sleep study.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I mean, you don't necessarily have sleep apnea every night. So you can have a good night and then you would have sleep apnea. Or, you know, especially if you're close to the border, if you will, then you might have problems the week after. So, yeah, there's a lot of variation there.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So hopefully we will hear more about the data and the research later, the update. So since we are talking about all this, I want to ask about warning signs, signals to help people identify any risk factors ahead of time. Is that something you can do, use this AI technology, use large data like this?
I mean, you could potentially, but here we have to be, again, a bit careful. We can give you the data, but we would never give a diagnosis or anything like that. That's just not something that we would be legally be okay to do. But of course, yes, there's a lot of different things that, and I think, I mean, you know about this as well. So depression, for instance, is something that you can usually see signs of in your sleeping patterns. And those are something that you can track over time with sleep cycle. Of course, then we have something else that I think is super exciting, and I really love that. So since we are doing breathing rate robustly, and we're actually able to do that really well, and it is surprising, I think, to many people, but we can actually track your breathing rate robustly, if there are multiple people in the room. So we can still do that. We use some sprinkles of magic, and then we're able to actually get that quite well. So that is a very, 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 very interesting signal for your health. So again, we can go back to COVID. That's just one example. But if you sleep, then you use a certain amount of oxygen. And so your breathing rate will need to be at a certain level. Now, what happens if you get a respiratory disease? Well, your lungs become less efficient. Hence, you have to increase your breathing rate, right? So you can see this really clearly. Before you even realize that you have COVID, you can see about 2 breaths per minute increase in your breathing rate. And that's very robust. So that's a super robust way of saying that you are getting sick. So we do that, and we are also doing coughing. So we detect coughs during the night. And again, you can start coughing during the night before you really realize that you are getting sick. And then in the morning, you can see your cough graphs. So you can see if you are kind of coughing more and more. And that's another sign of disease. This is more like, I guess it's not sleep problems, but this is like health-related problems that you can actually track for yourself. And now what we did, and this is something I really love. This is something we launched about a year ago. And it's quite amazing, I think. So what we realized is what we have here is we detect these coughs all around the world. Now, if we are able to do that in a privacy-preserving way, then what we realize that we have is more or less like a live stream of the world's coughing. because that's really what we have here. We have about a millennia of audio that we process every night. It's from everywhere. So we get a nice clean sample from the human race of where coughing is going on. So we thought, can we collect that in a way that doesn't give away the identity of the person? We do that by just collecting the number of coughs and how much you slept, and then an approximate position that we add noise to, so we can actually prove that it's differentially private, so the aggregate is not possible to connect back. Now we can use that data to compute coughing maps. So we actually have a website right now. You can go into sleepcycle.com/coughradar, or you can look at it in the app. We can, anywhere in the world where we have users, which is more or less everywhere in the Western world, and most of Asia as well, and South Africa and Australia, you can look into a city and you can see down to block level where coughing is going on. And you can play it back and forth like a video. So it looks a bit like a radar from rain, like a weather forecast, but for coughing. So you can look at those trends. You can see that, well, during Christmas, you have these huge spikes when people are, meeting up. And you can see the seasonal patterns. And if you zoom in a bit, you can see how coughing, like influenza waves, come and go in different cities. And you can even see how it moves around. And we're doing some research now, again, with some researchers at Cambridge, where they look at that data and connect that to air pollution to see if we can see how our nightly coughs are connected to air pollution. It looks like there could be something there. And we did an ECMID paper a few months ago where we showed that you can use this data, these coughing trends in states, in the United States, and compare that to the CDC data. And what we saw was, I think, quite amazing. We could really accurately predict the hospitalization rates from COVID and influenza in all states in the United States about 2 weeks in advance. So that means you have information, so you can allocate resources, and you can, also warn and go out with like public health warnings and restrictions much, much earlier. So this is in a way similar to what we do search terms. So you can look at Google search results and then get some early warning, but that's super noisy. Here we actually measure the coughing and the breathing, which is also important for this. And we can use that much, much more accurately. And we get this fair sample all over the world where everything is measured in exactly the same way. So we measure in exactly the same way in the United States as in Asia, as in Australia. So everything is comparable. So it's a very, very nice data set. And we get this fresh, like every morning. So this is really early. So it's quite amazing. You can even see like emerging symptoms before even people realize themselves in that area that they were starting to get sick, because start coughing before you realize it.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's very interesting. So I never know such a data exists. I would assume if I see the radar map and my surrounding areas start having more coughing going on, and then I possibly should be more careful, right? Start wearing masks when I go out, and just to be careful, watch out. Maybe there's another trend of the illness start around that time. Okay. I'm wondering what people use that for. Is it just to warn themselves, to understand, or just for curiosity? Is that like that website, that web page gets a lot of traffic?
So people are primarily using it right now inside of the app. But for us, yes, you can definitely use it as a private person. And you can maybe warn your friends that live in a different city that maybe it's time to go home, or when you're planning a vacation, maybe you're not going to plan it with a huge outbreak. But I would say, except for that, we are also approaching different like health agencies around the world to see how they can use this data in a good way. So what we're currently doing now is validating everything. That's why we did that article at ECMID, and we are working on the research to get it to a level where it's possible to use for health agencies. That's main.
Okay, that would be very helpful to on a larger scale, than just an individual private person to use it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Great. So great to have such a resource. And also, it's interesting you mentioned the breathe rate. I never thought about that. Like the rate of breathing actually may be related to some lung problem or can be a warning sign in a way or something happening in your body, right? I'm wondering, other than breathing rate, do you also measure the intensity, like sometimes our breathing change from normally we breathe lightly, but if we get sick, we may start breathing heavily. I don't know. Is there anything like that you look into in that data, or there's nothing related in that way?
That's a good question. It's more difficult since we don't really have this band. So with a band, you can get more information about how deep you're breathing, right? Yeah. From the audio, not as easy. Maybe possible, but we're not doing it right now. Right now, we have kind of concentrated on getting the breathing rate and also, again, how stable your breathing is over time. So we look at a window to see how much, how stable that is, because that's a very strong signal for the sleep staging.
Yeah, I see. Okay. And then I'm also curious, I don't know whether you know the details. You mentioned a little bit depression, like mental disorders, for example, you will be able to see some signals from the sleep pattern. And I'm just wondering what kind of signals or patterns in sleep may be related to mental disorders.
I don't want to guess. I think this is a question that Mike would be perfect for answering. I just know there's a connection, but I don't want to guess the connection right now.
Yeah, sure. I'm curious. I never know about that. If there's any paper on that topic, I would love to read it. I don't know whether there's already some established data around that and you guys already published it.
We haven't published ourselves, but I have seen papers on that subject. So I know there exists research that indicates that there is such a connection, but I can't tell you exactly how it works.
Okay, sure. Then I have another more technical question. So in the past, I feel like when we do PSG sleep study, right, we have so many wearers on our body to get so many data. And for wearables, at least on our hand or something, it's connected to our skin. But for Sleep Cycle, it's a phone app. So it's on the phone. You just put the phone on your bed near you. How that can actually detect all this data about sleep and so accurately? I'm always puzzled by it.
No, it's a good question. And it's not easy. We've been working on it for a very long time. And I should say, this is a bit bragging, I guess, but I know that there are other apps that are doing similar things that we are. They use, I think, more or less off-the-shelf software to do detect movements and kind of do that. You can get some snores. But being able to do like robust sleep staging, that's very, very difficult. You need to invest a lot in the technology to be able to do that at a level where it's actually quite accurate. So I can start with that. It's not easy. But if you think about it, I mean, there's a reason that most animals in the world have ears. Audio is a very strong, like a rich signal. You can get a lot of information from audio. It's a difficult signal to work with just because there's so much information in it, but you can get a surprising amount of information from that signal. So it's a really good signal. If you compare that to pulse, for instance, that's much more zoomed in, and oxidization level for sleep apnea, that's also something that's very zoomed in, and it's a very specific signal, which makes it easier to work with in a certain way. I mean, for doing sleep staging with a wearable, obviously it's easier to make sure that you're tracking the right person, so that part becomes easier. But tracking your breath, it's actually quite difficult to do that well using a wearable that doesn't use audio. So I know that, or at least that, as far as I know, Apple is doing it using an accelerometer, so they kind of detect faint, small movements when you sleep. And from that, they can get some approximate breathing and breathing rate. But that signal is much, much weaker than the audio. So you can quite clearly hear people when they breathe, especially if they snore, of course, then it's almost too easy. But even if they don't, it's actually quite easy to hear the breath. Distinguishing the inhale and exhale, that's a bit more difficult, but we're surprisingly good at doing that as well. I can almost not hear it myself, but there are certain cues that the AI is picking up. So from enough data, you're able to do that. And then on top of that, you need to add a lot of tracking to make it work with multiple people, so you can do some source separation. But that's part of our proprietary stuff that I don't want to go into too much detail. I don't want to give away the
sure, but still sounds very interesting. There's a lot can be done to even if there's a phone app beside you, you still can detect a lot of great signals and analyze it using AI model in a way to make it still accurate and helpful, to make it helpful data for us. And then I think people have different, I talk to people, different people have different perceptions of, sleep apps, and there are so many different sleep trackers outside. So are you aware of any common misperceptions people may carry around what these phone trackers or phone apps doing?
Yeah, I think, they're misconceptions because they're not updated. But if we looked at the field 7 years ago or 5 years ago, then they weren't really at the level they are right now. At least the level that we have been able to get to is a completely different level. So if you look at old papers evaluating sleep apps 5 years ago, or the versions that were out just even 3 years ago, to be honest, they're not going to be great. They're going to have a pretty low Cohen's kappa. They're not going to be very good at detecting the onset of sleep even. And for sleep staging, they were more or less random. So I think it's not wrong. It's just you should update and try us now and see where we are actually at now, which is a completely different ballpark. So I think not being accurate is probably one thing, but we're not there anymore, or we're very accurate now. But or at least sleep cyclists. I can't talk for the other ones. But that's one thing. The other one is obviously, how are you able to know if it's me or my partner? So that's something else that people struggle with, which I understand. It's not easy for us to do it. So being able to actually detect the persons, the subject that are tracking, the closest subject, and differentiate that from the partner is a difficult problem. That we solve in many different ways. So with the breathing, we have certain techniques for doing it. For snoring, we actually have a patent for how to differentiate different people's snoring. So we can do something called few-shot learning. You indicate 3 or 4 or 5 different snores and say if it's your snores or your partner's snore, and then we can kind of sort them to the correct person. So that's another one thing that we have worked on a lot and we continue to work with. Of course, if both people have phones and sleep cycle, then we can actually even connect them, and then it's even better. So then we can even differentiate some sounds that are very difficult to differentiate right now. Like movements, for instance, can be difficult with only one microphone, but then we get to an even higher level. So those are some things and things that we have worked a lot on addressing to kind of get to the level we are now.
Great. And then looking forward, where do you think this AI technology is going to help the sleep field expand and move forward continuously? What AI can do? Any vision you want to share?
Yeah, sure. I think what we have now all over medicine really is great techniques for doing tests, and we can get all of these numbers, and that's great. But then interpreting that data and going from that to actually providing a good advice or a good coaching for for the customers is very difficult. That's another very difficult problem. And that's also something that we are working on right now and have some features to kind of in that direction. We have the Sleep GPT coach, which is a very rudimentary sleep coach that we are now working on to kind of develop into a slightly more advanced sleep coach, because we kind of launched this just a few months after ChatGPT came, so we used that. But now we are working on a more advanced version of it. So that together with, I think, different forms of reinforcement learning. So what we want to do here is, if you as a user have a certain goal, say you want to sleep more regularly, then we can have reinforcement learning algorithms that kind of try to give you good advice on how to improve that. And then we can follow up because we see if your regularity improves or not, and then train that online to kind of on all of our user base to understand what kind of advices actually work for this particular type of customer to actually have that outcome that they want to have. Now, it sounds easy, but it's probably shouldn't, because it is a very difficult problem and it's a very highly diverse set, and being able to do this in a safe way, we don't want to give stupid advice that, you know, makes you sleep worse. So we need to be responsible in how to do it. But that, I think, is really the future for everything in medicine, like personalized medicine. I think that's just that's amazing if we can get there, and that's something that I would like to be a part of.
Yeah, wow, that's great. In my podcast, I will say sleep is very individualized thing. Everyone's sleep is different, and everyone needs different suggestions to optimize their sleep to make it better if they want to, right? So I'm glad it feels like if someone can do that, AI possibly can really do it faster and help meet the need that sleep expert is just not enough right now worldwide. We do have a shortage of that, how many people we can help individually, one by one, right? Personalize this. AI possibly can make it happen someday. So sounds like we will not only have AI-supported sleep testing, we will also move towards have AI-supported sleep coach, AI-informed sleep intervention in the future. And that can be really help each individual to get a personalized intervention plan based on their personalized sleep data.
Exactly. That is, that's the holy grail. That's where we want to be.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I'm curious to see when that's going to happen and what that may look like for everyone. Yeah. And that's going to make it so easy to be assessed, I guess, by a lot of people. When they cannot make an appointment with some kind of sleep doctor, they possibly can turn to AI sleep coach and still get a decent suggestion based on their data. Yeah, that would be great.
That would be very great. And I think that's on a personal, but also on a societal level, actually, with preventative healthcare. And it's also something that I see how we can be one part of that, how we can use the sleep data and the coughing data and the breathing data and everything to kind of do preventative healthcare. So when understanding before people start to get sick, understanding that it's something is happening on an individual level or on a macro level, and then being able to give advice at the right moment in time to prevent whatever is about to happen before it happens. I mean, that would be amazing. Again, I think that's a little bit further into the future because it's difficult, but it's something that is talked about a lot right now in the community, and something that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, thank you for the great work. And we will hope together this AI technology can really thrive and help us to bring us all into the next stage of technology, science, and sleep optimization for everyone.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming to the podcast and sharing all your knowledge and with our audience. And any Any final words you want to share with everyone, or how we can find all this great information and download this app? Anything you want to share?
Of course, we're available on both Android and iOS. So just look us up in App Store, Sleep Cycle, easy to find. And if you want to look at the cough radar maps, again, you can actually go to our homepage that's just been released. So sleepcycle.com/cough radar. Or you can download the app and then you can see it in app and work with it a little bit more with like the playback and all of that good stuff. So please try that. It's kind of fun.
Great. I want to try it. I will check out the cough reader to see around my clinic area what that may look like right now, because we are still wearing masks to be cautious. So I just want to know what that read look like right now.
Sounds great.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you use any sleep trackers when you sleep? Do you find it's helpful to you or make you more anxious about your sleep? Leave me a message, let me know. I'm Dr. Yishan. Thank you for listening and watching. So after this episode, I actually gonna go to Singapore for the World Sleep Conference. Hopefully, I will see a lot of interesting topics and I will share in my episode with you. If you have any questions about sleep, any topics you want to listen to, any guests you want me try to invite, let me know. Hopefully, you respect your own body's signal about sleep and have a good night of sleep. I will see you next time. Bye.
Sleep is an individual thing. We all sleep differently, and there is so much we can do to improve sleep quality. Keep hope and carry on. This podcast is for general informational purpose only and does not include the practice of medicine or other health professional services. Usage of the information we share is at the listener's own risk, and our content does not intend to be a substitute for any medical and professional services, diagnoses, and treatment. Please seek professional health services as needed.